You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 210.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. Joined by Aaron today here in the Local Maximum Studios. How you doing, Aaron?
It's a pleasure as always.
Yes, and today, okay, it took me a while to get my energy up because I feel like, you know, I have very low energy on those dark, cold days and also on those like hot and humid days. So there's a period like almost 6 months apart where I'm like, woof, I can't do it, but I can do it.
We are emerging from, what is it, Winter Storm Keenan?
I didn't know it had a name.
Yeah, I didn't until yesterday afternoon, and I hate it. Naming winter storms, bad choice, and whoever decided to do that, you should feel bad about being wrong.
I was promised like the storm of the century. It was going to be 3 feet. We weren't going to be able to see anything, and it was just kind of, probably a storm that I would expect during the course of the winter, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah, my daughter was concerned that the snow was going to be taller than she was, and
not even close.
Not a problem.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we have a few news items to talk about today, including the metaverse, and then onto a mathematical topic: do infinite sets exist? That's an interesting one. First of all, this is a story we've been following over the years in the Local Maximum: the end of Diem. Diem is over. Now you're probably thinking to yourself as I broke this shocking news, what the heck is Diem? And it turns out
it's not a per diem.
Yes. No. Yeah. Well, I suppose maybe those two terms are related. So you probably heard, if you remember back to maybe 2019. Now this feels like a million years ago. 2019.
Yeah, pre-COVID. Are you crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially, Bitcoin is dead. Other cryptocurrencies are dead because Facebook is coming out with their own coin. And for those of you who don't understand,
I don't think anyone outside of Mountain View actually thought that.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, but like that was the narrative in a lot of the mainstream sources.
Get out of the way, kiddies. The big fish is in the pond
now. But anyone who understands how cryptocurrencies work realize that this is, you know, not, this is kind of a fool's errand. But you never know. They could always, anytime you think something for certain, there's always this little possibility in your mind. Maybe there's something I don't understand. Maybe this isn't going to turn out the way I think. But, anyway, they rebranded to Diem from Libra. They were originally called Libra because the Winklevoss twins had Gemini, right? And so, you know, Zuckerberg, I think, chose Libra to be like, that's after Gemini, you know, in the calendar.
It's a low blow.
Right. So, yes, if I didn't blow you enough, I'm going to blow you again. That came out wrong.
Yeah. But, I was going to say, are we not doing phrasing anymore?
Okay. Anyway, I'm very bad at coming up with phrases on the fly. It would make it kind of impossible for me to run for office or anything like that. But anyway, let's go back from there. Zuckerberg was sticking it to them. The problem was Libra being associated with Facebook was kind of a negative because people didn't want to be associated with Facebook for the whole privacy issue. Facebook's name didn't carry, didn't actually help. It turned out to be a hindrance. And so they had this large consortium. Yeah. And they changed the name to Diem. And so that was their currency. And then the question is, has it failed completely or did it just hit a roadblock? Well, this is from the Wall Street Journal. Facebook's ambitious effort to bring cryptocurrency to the masses has failed. The Diem Association, the consortium Facebook founded in 2019 to build a futuristic payments network, is winding down and selling its technology to a small California bank that serves Bitcoin and blockchain companies for about $200 million, a person familiar with the matter said. $200 million seems like a lot, but it's a small amount for these folks. So I don't know. That sounds pretty unequivocally dead to me. I mean, I don't know. You know, that's about as dead as you can get.
They could always try to breathe more life into it, but I don't foresee that happening.
Yeah.
So two thoughts. One, before we move too much further. I'm going to reach back to my my astrology here.
Yes.
And it did not occur to me until you were in the middle of saying that both Libra and Gemini are actually very apt. Names for these. Gemini, because so they were the twins.
Okay, I actually know nothing about these. So
that makes sense for the, I'm blanking on their names now. The
Winklevoss twins.
The Winklevoss twins, thank you.
Tyler and Cameron.
And I believe Libra was the scales, which if you're talking about a...
Wait, hold on. Gemini are twins?
Yes.
I didn't know there were twins on the in the Zodiac. Are there?
And that's why the Gemini program, which preceded Apollo, was named as such, because it involved docking
two
vehicles as practice for what they would have to do with the later Apollo program.
Yeah. And Libra?
And so Libra, I believe, is a scale, which if you're talking about a stable coin, but might seem like an appropriate... I would have to imagine that they had people on their team who thought this all through, and it wasn't just a happy accident. But it only just occurred to me.
Okay, yeah, no, that's very interesting. I don't think it was an accident. I think it was purposeful. Yeah,
the dig at the Winklevosses is just a happy bonus, I think, for Zuckerberg on top of that.
Yeah, I think. I mean, it seems like how could that possibly be an accident? That's like slash they knew, right? So look. This is one of those times where I get to say we told you so. In episode 72, when I had Miriam on the show back in the Foursquare office, we predicted this failure. And then in episode 139, we did an update on Libra languishing, and we're like, almost told you so. Now it's definitively we told you so on this
one. It took a while. I was going to ask, do we have any records from the tech retreats in our predictions specifically about Libra? But a specific on-show prediction is even more on point than
right,
that.
Right. And I feel like, and I wrote this down, I feel like it's almost a reverse Gandhi, whereas the quote attributed to Gandhi, which is not really, let me give you the quote first, is you might have heard it. It's first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And I looked it up. I actually think it's a paraphrase of a letter written by him, so that's actually not so bad. This is almost like, first you tell them you're so big and powerful that you can't lose, and then you languish, and then you lose. it's a reverse Gandhi kind of a situation. So, this happened. One comment that I saw, I don't think it was a comment. I think it was something that was written in a media article. It might have been the New York Times or someone like that. This article I'm getting from the Wall Street Journal. Actually, the other one might be something from Washington Post. Was like, this is an example of Facebook's mantra of failing fast. Now, I don't know.
That's 50% accurate.
Yeah. Well, you have the fail part. Now, fast, 3 years really isn't fast. Maybe for something like this. Maybe you can argue, hey, this was such a moonshot and they have to do a lot of these to get one that finally sticks. And then it's a trillion dollar market. And, you know, maybe it was a good risk. But I don't think so. I think that I think they could have seen this coming from the beginning. And I actually think it was a misguided attempt to follow the trend, which was they see all these coins coming out. There weren't NFTs then, but they're like, oh yeah, cryptocurrencies, coins. That's what we have to get, folks. Let's get me some coins. And then they put this together and they did it to impress investors and impress management, who apparently were not impressive enough to see through this. But I think that a lot of tech management gets into this. I love ripping on tech management in general on this show, but they get into this thing where they have to follow the trends. And I think many times, like that kind of, you never really, sometimes you do make it big by following the trends. I guess Facebook originally did, but oftentimes it doesn't work out, the way you think it is. And so, I just want to say, a couple things before we, and this plays into Facebook's rebranding as Meta, because now they're like, okay, you know, okay, folks, coins are out. Metaverse is in. Let's do this. Yeah. You know, and okay,
what is
in my mind, this is not politically correct, but I almost have Facebook not being very politically correct. I'm like, okay, boys, it's time for some Meta. Drop your coins, take up your Meta. Like that's sort of how I feel like it is. But what were you saying?
What is Jack Dorsey's other venture other than Twitter? Is that Square?
Yes.
So I feel like the way they went in on this and put their name all over it.
Well, now it's
like
Cube. Now it's Block.
Well, if when he launched Square, if instead of launching it as its own thing, if he'd instead been like, okay, we're bringing Twitter Cash and tried to like launch it inside that ecosystem, I think A, people would be like, what do I need this for? And B, right, it would feel like a weird overreach. And that's exactly what we saw here, that everybody had a visceral negative reaction to it. Whereas if they'd done this as a separate kind of spin out with borrowing some resources from Facebook, but standing it up separately, or if they'd, you know, supported this consortium, but been very much a silent partner and kept it under wraps, maybe they could have gotten it to the point where it was a viable thing to stand on its own and launch, and then they could leverage that, but not the way they did it, putting the Facebook name front forwards there on there.
Well, they never explains the benefit of it other than one thing, but the there is no benefit in terms of having another cryptocurrency. It doesn't provide any service that Bitcoin or Ethereum or anything else doesn't provide. And there are already stable coins out there, GUSD, Gemini, not needed. The only benefit they have is like, well, we're Facebook and we're huge. So if we make this the native currency of Facebook, it's going to be huge. That is the only benefit they had for it. And so to spin it off, it made no sense. But that should have been a red flag.
Sure they pitched it as well as like, we're going to make the barriers to entry so low and even your grandmother can do it. But they didn't, there wasn't anything they delivered on that front that made it a convincing case for them being able to differentiate themselves.
Yeah,
there.
I think they never really had a plan, to be honest. And I'm wondering if this is proof of the value of decentralized blockchain solutions, where it's like, yes, a lot of people are afraid that there's going to be central bank digital currencies that, you know, central banks around the world, whether it's the World Bank or IMF or the Federal Reserve or whatever, is coming out with their own cryptocurrency. I mean, some countries have, and that those are going to compete with the sort of decentralized blockchain based, I guess maybe the central bank might be blockchain as well, but the open blockchain based digital currencies might not, might not be able to compete. But I think this is a good kind of warm up indicator that the cryptoverse as it is right now can compete very well with these centrally planned kind of solutions. And so, you know, Bitcoin is still king of the cryptoverse. There are other ones out there as well, but they seem to stick around, and all of these big players that come in and try to plan things from the top down, from a big company, from a big organization, have actually failed. So,
that ties directly back into what you were hinting at before with the metaverse, that you can have an argument about whether the core idea and the product is viable and worthwhile, but if you're putting the Facebook brand on it front and center, that's going to be perhaps more of a burden. There's no synergy there. It's going to make the sell harder than if the idea were to try to stand on its own two feet.
Right, right. So in a later episode, I know we finally have a president who is going to speak about cryptocurrencies. I'm not sure Biden has any idea what they are. But that kind of reminds me, you know, I mean, I hahate to say it, because Rahm Emanuel, I actually think I'm pretty sure he's a pretty smart guy. But I remember I was actually there in person when he was presenting the Foursquare badges, the Chicago badge came out. I was in Chicago. And so he made a little talk. He said, this is great. Business of Chicago, the Chicago badge. But afterwards, I felt like he was just like, I don't know what the heck this is. I'm out of here. But I guess that makes sense. But anyway, Biden is going to release his executive action on cryptocurrencies and NFTs. I don't want to talk about it right now because it hasn't been released. But we're going to get to that when he does soon. We don't know what it's going to be. But I have a feeling it's created by people who don't know what they're doing. So we'll see what happens.
If I feel like I'm too old to understand the point of NFTs, then Joe Biden is absolutely too old to understand NFTs.
Yeah.
And maybe they have some, you know, late teen 20 somethings in their administration, some interns who understand this, but I can't imagine there's anybody in a position of actual power in the White House staff that gets what this is.
Right. I think, well, we'll see what it is. I don't want to comment on it. I could go on and on about what they might be doing, but I don't want to comment
TBD.
On it.
Yeah. Put that on the agenda for a future episode.
Okay. So Facebook walked into this blunder. Could the same thinking, be behind their, the metaverse, the same kind of flawed thinking as envisioned by the big tech leaders. And so I guess where I'm going here is like the crypto sphere, the cryptocurrencies have been planned from the ground up. Bitcoin originally was just like one person. I mean, maybe some people think Satoshi Nakamoto is actually an organization, but even so, it wasn't like a global, you know, if it was an organization, it was a few people.
Right.
And then grew from the ground up. And a lot of these other currencies were done by individuals and it was like a marketplace. Whereas the metaverse is sort of being envisioned by the top down by these big tech leaders. And is that going to work? And so you had Facebook, rebranding itself to Meta. So that shows the harm in the Facebook name, like they don't even want to use the name anymore. And so let's talk about what the metaverse, what's it supposed to be? It's supposed to be a virtual reality place where people get together in free 3D. But I'm concerned that metaverse is starting to be just a rebranding of virtual reality, because that's not what I thought it was. That's not what it is in the science fiction literature. It's actually a universe that you go into, or a world that you go into where you interact with people, but there's a semi-permanence to that world. Whereas this is more like just kind of glorified VR, but I don't even know if it's glorified. They say it includes a digital second life as a mix-in, but what is that? Just social media, just your identity online. So I'm sort of wondering where this is going, but Microsoft is getting in to the metaverse business. They bought this company, Activision Blizzard, for $70 billion, $68.7 billion. That is an eye-popping amount.
So I hadn't thought of that as a metaverse play.
Yeah, well, they consider it a metaverse play. Now, this company does not have VR software, but they do have Call of Duty, World of Warcraft. These are massively multiplayer games. What's the acronym? I think it's MMORPG.
Yes.
Okay. I can never pronounce that. MORPG.
I don't think you say the acronym as the letters.
Okay. Massively multiplayer online role-playing games. So maybe this is the idea where, you know, if you turn that into a virtual reality version, that's more of a metaverse type situation. But again, it's more virtual reality.
I would see the bigger battle between Microsoft and I was going to say Facebook, but I'll play along Meta here, is really about VR versus AR when it comes to this, because they both have visions of the metaverse, but they have different core competencies in what their companies are able to provide. That Microsoft has gone much deeper on the augmented reality. What is it? Their HoloLens derived product. While Facebook they acquired Oculus, however many years ago that was, and so they're going for a fully immersive VR approach. And,
right.
So what they're both referring to as metaverse, I think, are divergent concepts. But they suffer from, I think, the same problem you're talking about, that it's less a digital universe with that kind of persistence and and volume to it, and more a we've taken your Zoom conferences and put them into a augmented reality or virtual reality environment.
Right. So there are two uses for it I can see is like gaming, which, you know, you can kind of envision how that's already working with the MMO, whatever. And the second one is, right, 3D meetings. Like, who wants that? I feel like...
Well, so there's a hybrid of that that I think actually works pretty well. And I haven't done any VR, so I don't have direct experience with this, but I've heard really good things about the VR version of I think it's Tabletop Simulator, which allows you to bring people from around the world into a virtual room and do something literally like play a board game or a role-playing game around the table. And it's more immersive than just doing it through Zoom screens or just audio. But you're also not trying to create like a the kind of verisimilitude that gets you across the uncanny valley. You're okay with that abstraction. And I think in that narrow use case, it works, but expanding that to like work meetings and every other social interaction that I have seems less desirable. And maybe, again, that's because I'm an old and the kids these days.
You always brand yourself as old.
I feel old. Well, I feel old because I don't get the appeal here. I think what they're pitching is there's little value, not zero, but a lot less than what they clearly see in it if they think they can make that much money off of it.
Well, the problem is you call yourself, you don't even call yourself old, you call yourself an old, like it's a noun. But the people who are pushing this and coming up with this, they're even older.
This is true, yeah.
And so...
I have no faith in them being better touched there.
No,
if,
I feel
if anything,
like,
it's by accident.
I mean, it's Mark Zuckerberg, who's my age, and the older people that he hired. And I feel like it's basically just... a bunch of middle-aged men trying to play out their fantasies of what being a tech god will be like.
Right, and the stereotype is that, you know, back in the 2010s, all the high school and college kids got off Facebook because that's where their parents were,
right.
and fled to, you know, I guess first Snapchat and then TikTok, and I don't know what the next thing is. It's probably something so cool I haven't even heard of it yet. But you know,
you're not hipster enough.
If they've already fled the platform, I can't imagine this is going to bring them back in.
Right. Right. No, it'd have to be a new platform. One comment that, I don't even have the person being quoted, but this looks like it's an official at, I should probably look into who was actually writing this.
While you're looking for that, I think a even more simplified assessment here is something that you were talking about before with the crypto, not in terms of decentralization versus top down, but in a kind of follow the trends approach here, that Facebook and Microsoft feel like they were caught off guard by Zoom somehow coming out of nowhere and winning the video conferencing market during 2020. And so they're seeing this as a way that they can kind of recapture that inertia. I think it's a flawed play, but that's what they're going for. They want to be able to dominate that market, that if they're going to be people sitting in front of screens, talking to other people sitting in front of screens, they want those people to be doing it in their walled garden.
Right. But
or at least looking through their window so that they can collect data and serve advertisements to them.
I think that the Zoom example is another example that is in some way related to the cryptocurrency example. I understand like Zoom is a centralized company, but it's also started as its own startup, focused on this very specific thing.
It wasn't a team inside Microsoft developing their video conferencing tool. It was a group that got together to do that one specific thing.
And I actually think that's, if a metaverse does come to pass, that it's going to be someone like that. It's not going to be these companies. But anyway, so this quote is from Matthew Ball, a venture capitalist who has written exclusively about the topic. This is from the New York Times article recently about it. Said... The metaverse represented the fourth wave to computers, following mainstream computing, personal computing, and mobile computing. It's moving into what people call ambient computing, he said about the metaverse. It's about being within the computer rather than accessing the computer. It's about being always online rather than having access to an online world. Now, does that remind you of anything, the term ambient computing? Because I believe I had that term passive computing locked
up. What could you possibly be hinting at?
It
definitely has some solid echoes there.
Right, right. So my passive computing thing, and this actually, these ideas, a lot of them come from Dennis Crowley, but it's more like, you know, having your, it's not just about, whereas ambient computing is things being within the computer, but passive computing is being like your computations happening without your needed input. Like it almost, it anticipates what you're going to need. I mean, that's a part of it. I think they're trying to make something happen, but it might not be up to them is how we'll see. But we'll see how it goes. Microsoft's not going to buy this thing for $70 billion and not put up a hell of a fight, but it could just be domination of the gaming market, which would probably also be worth $70,000. I mean, I thought by now with their Kinect, they would be...
$70 billion.
Did I say million?
You said thousand.
Oh, thousand?
I would buy at that price.
Yes. I might too.
I think the other thing we skipped over because we jumped right to the implications for the metaverse.
First of all, by the way, this is not the first time I've got those order magnitudes wrong. I get them wrong all the time. So definitely call me out on that.
Sorry, it's just a few zeros between friends. Separate from the metaverse implications, if we're purely looking at the computer and console gaming markets, this is a big splash because Activision Blizzard was a quote-unquote independent developer. And now that they are being brought into the Microsoft stable, that has some people worried about kind of parity across the market for releases on other platforms. So Microsoft obviously has their Xbox line of consoles, and a big deal in the console market, especially when it comes around time of launching a new console, is who has exclusive games to their platform. So I don't know that Blizzard Activision has been under contract to do any exclusive games for Sony and the PlayStation platform that have yet to been released, but it sounds like they have confirmed that the next three Call of Duty games will be released on both platforms, so that Microsoft is not immediately, at least, bringing that in-house as a Xbox Microsoft exclusive.
Right.
Which, you know, I haven't played one of those games in probably a decade, and when I did, it was on PC because I'm a firm believer in the supremacy of mouse and keyboard. But those are big deal names in terms of you know, kind of hardcore gamer recognition and revenue for the industry. So that matters, and yeah, I think Sony is going to be maybe not quaking in their boots, but definitely considering their options for how they can secure a safer future for their console market.
Right, right. And this is a huge deal. It could take 18 months to finalize. And exactly, like, it could just be all about the content for Xbox, but they're saying metaverse as a marketing kind of a thing. Also, I should note there are unverified rumors that Apple Glasses will come out this year. That would be a big deal. But again, unverified. So we'll cover that as it happens. So that would be another thing in this debate. All right. I think it's time for the math topic of the day, unless you have something else too.
I don't think so. Let's right. Shift gears.
All right. So I actually wanted to talk about something in set theory called the axiom of infinity. Without getting too much detail, it basically says that infinite sets exist. You can have an infinity of things. And there is some controversy about it. And so I just want to talk about why that is. And so first of all, I want to get one thing in the debate out of the way, because in episode 94, I talked about something called infinite ratios, a little bit different from infinite sets. An infinite ratio is when, you know, what's a ratio? If I have a certain number of things, what's the math here? Like apples, right? If I have three apples and you have three apples, our ratio is
1:1,
right? If I have zero apples and you have however many, five
apples, okay.
Right? So the ratio is 0:1. But if you reverse that and you're the one with zero, then that same ratio becomes 5:0 or 1:0. And, you know, we don't really have a very good way of talking about that mathematics, but we can introduce an infinite ratio. Sometimes mathematicians formalize this as like the projective line, like you're keeping track of the two numbers. So you know, you just like you could have a zero ratio, you can have an infinite ratio. Now, that is, if you want more information about that, that's on episode 94. That's different from what we're talking about today, because today we're talking about infinite sets. Like, let's think of one, the set of counting numbers. That's a very simple one. Zero, okay. One, two. Of course, I can't start with zero.
Can we take a step back for a moment?
Ask me a question.
And what is a set?
Right. It's just a collection of things.
Because I'm trying to visualize this as something I can like draw a circle around. And,
right.
And that becomes difficult when that thing is infinite.
Right, right. So a set is, there is no requirement that you can draw a circle around it. It could be a finite set of finite things. Now you could have a set of things that are, so a set is generally, as a mathematical concept, are a set of like things that you've previously defined or talked about. So, but you can actually talk about a set as, if the items in the set are like physical objects, then what you're doing is you're kind of mixing a mathematical reality with a physical reality, which is what we do sometimes. Like if I say, hey, there's a pond out there, I'm talking about the set of ducks in that pond. We can wrap our head around that, but that's not a mathematical object. That's not a purely mathematical object.
Right.
It's a mathematical construct.
There are complications when you apply a mathematical construct to reality and then do mathematical operations and then try and bring it back to reality.
Right. But you probably can in that case, because you could say, okay, that could be put to one to one in terms of this set that has 20 elements. So I'm saying that means that there are 20 ducks in that pond. But generally, the items in the set, when you talk about mathematics, are all mathematical constructions, which mean there are very precise logical definitions on how they're created. So one example is numbers. There's counting numbers, and specifically, there's a very specific rule as to how those are created. And the rule is basically, you get zero for free. There are two rules. First rule is you get zero, and the second rule is any number you could create a successor. So you get to one, you get to two, so on and so forth. And then, so you could easily create a finite set of that. That just means there's a certain number of elements. You could create a set of like two, four, and six, whereas you define two as the successor to the successor of zero. But we don't have to write that all out. We all know how it goes. Zero, one, two. We've known how that goes since age. Your kids are probably old enough to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
at least up to a reasonable number.
At least up to a reasonable number, right. But then there is the idea, well, I've got these two rules. Can I create the set of all objects that could be created using those two rules? That's the set of natural numbers. And so that is considered a mathematically precise definition. I understand the definition of how to use those two rules needs further like explanation in terms of the fundamentals, but let's not care about that. So that's considered a set in mathematics. And most mathematicians agree, and including I also agree, that that should be considered a set as well. However, it took mathematicians a while to accept this for a number of reasons. First of all, so it wasn't really accepted until this mathematician, Georg Cantor. I'm sure you've heard the word Cantor before. This was in the late 1800s. So before that, infinity had to be very, very careful about that. And you still have to be careful about it. But we've now formalized how you could do it. And I think there's a couple of reasons for why it's not accepted. First of all, like in mathematics, the interesting thing is there were a lot of things that were not allowed until some point, like zero. There was no zero. So zero Roman numerals. I mean, imagine how hard it was to talk about certain things without a zero. Zero is like, I always check things at zero. That's how I solve all my problems. you know, no negative numbers, no complex imaginary numbers, etc. So now you might think like, oh, great. Let me invent a new mathematical object, and then maybe I'll be oppressed, but eventually I'll get it out there. But I actually think that era is over of not allowing certain things. I think nowadays in mathematics, like any structure is allowed so long as it can be justified as logically consistent. And it's even allowed if it's possibly logically inconsistent in order to like kind of discover, okay, what are the consequences? Can we show that this is inconsistent? Or we don't know if it's inconsistent, but here are the consequences that we do know about it. And then if it's shown as inconsistent, then all those kind of end up being nonsense anyway. But the era of not allowing certain constructs is over. Now there are sort of like standards in terms of, okay, like we consider natural numbers to be 0, 1, 2, 3, like the counting numbers. Some people start at 1, but you're not allowed to say, well, I invented another natural number that's not in there, because like it's kind of standard that we have this very useful set that we're just going to use. And if you invent something else, then it's in something else. So I actually think that era has been killed personally. I mean, I feel like there could be some disagreement on that. But the second problem is that there's a lot of problems that come up with infinite sets. First of all, there's some weird like arithmetic that happens. Like if Hilbert's hotel, you have an infinite number of people in hotel rooms, and then you have everyone move up a room and all of a sudden you have a vacancy. Like what's with that? And then also you have like, can have sets that contain themselves. And then there's all sorts of paradoxes associated with that. And we talked about that in episode 39, where if a set is not well-founded, if it's a member of itself, or if it's a member of itself, like if you can't get down to the bottom of what you're talking about, then
is this the classic? Does the set of all sets contain itself?
Right. Exactly. And then if it does, it doesn't. Or if it doesn't, it does. So
is that Russell's paradox?
Paradox, right? And all right. So we talked about that in episode 39, and so that sort of led people to stay away from it. On the other hand, it turned out that you can make consistent rules with regard to it. In fact, Cantor came up with this idea that there are actually multiple levels of infinity. So you can't just have, you know, the level of natural numbers, but then when you have the level of real numbers, that is the continuum, and that can't be put in one-to-one correspondence with the natural numbers. Interestingly, fractions you can put in one-to-one correspondence with the natural numbers, but and by having this like stratified kind of system, you could actually get around a lot of the paradoxes and come up with a lot of the rules. But there are some holdouts. Interestingly enough, there are some mathematicians that don't like the idea that you could talk about an infinite number of things, and they are called, there are two types. There's finitists. They only like finite things, and they're okay with potentially infinite things. So Aristotle talked about potentially infinite, so that goes a long way. That's a process of potentially infinite. And then there's like ultra-finitists who believe that even large numbers can't exist. Now, I know it sounds funny, but there are some people who actually say this. I'm sure you have some questions.
Have they considered the cost of purchasing Blizzard Activision?
Well, actually, they're not worried about those numbers, but from my understanding is, first of all, they care about how those numbers are represented. So like, for example, the way I spoke about it before, it's the numbers are represented as 0, successor, 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 successor. That's 4. Okay, I just counted to 4.
Okay.
And so in their view, if you're using that system, like a Google doesn't exist, followed by 100 zeros, because that is, more than the number of atoms or electrons in the universe. There'll never be enough time to count to that number. And so therefore they're like, well, it practically doesn't exist. So they don't like that in their mathematics, but they say, but if you represent numbers using the either the binary system or the decimal system or whatever, place value system, then sure, you could have that number. But in any system we can construct these super huge numbers, like Graham's number, which I'm not going to get into, is you can't get there. So I think that's the argument, but I'm not doing it justice because I'm a little bit, I realize I'm not doing it justice because I'm not a proponent of it. So I'll put it that way. So there's this debate on the topic that I watched with Norman Wildberger, who is one of these finitists, who I thought was very interesting.
Was this a recent debate, or is this from,
I think it's
from
a few years ago. Okay. It's a few years ago. But I can't wrap my head. So they don't, you know, they don't like real numbers either. And so, for example, they can't call pi a number. It has to be some computational process. Now, what they argue is, and yes, I agree, maybe on some level, pi is a computational process, because if I represent it on a computer, it's either a computation or some, I could represent it as exactly pi as some ongoing computation, or I could represent it as a, like, kind of
approximation.
Exactly. However, if you're doing mathematics and you're like, if you're going to consider pi as not a number and all these irrational numbers as not a number, I just feel like it makes mathematics immensely more difficult to talk about and without much benefit, because everything that we talk about as numbers, even if we want to define them underneath as computational processes, that just slows people down unnecessarily.
By that logic, though, is not the number 4 simply a computational process, because it's successor.
Right, but it has a finite, it ends. It has a finite representation.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's the problem where that they point out that's maybe even more problematic. I hate that term, but maybe even more problematic is that there's this idea of these unknowable numbers in the real number system. What's an unknowable number? That is a number that, let's say it's a number between 0 and 1. I don't know why I picked that, but let's say it's like a manageable number. I'm not talking about a super huge number. I'm not talking about a super small number, but it can never be spoken or represented in any language. Now, how do we know that?
But why?
Right. So we know that because of Cantor. Because he showed that you could never put the counting numbers in one-to-one correspondence with a real number. You've always missed one. So if you try to take all the real numbers and count them, here's one, here's one, here's one, and set up some infinite process that tries to denumerate them, essentially, he proved that you'll always miss one, or you'll miss a lot. it turns out if you miss one, you miss a lot. So you can denumerate
in the sense that something will be skipped, or just that at
something
some point
will be missing.
You have to stop, but the numbers go on arbitrarily long.
No. Something will be missing. And the reason is I think it's like too much to go over the diagonal argument here. But basically, if you're listing all the real numbers, then imagine that you look at the numbers on the diagonal of those guesses, because they're all infinite decimals, right? And then you switch everything on the diagonal, that number will never be in the list. So that's sort of how it works there.
Let's take a momentary step back here and clarify real numbers.
Yeah. Oh, that's every number on the number line. So any number between 0 and 1.
Okay. Right. But not limited to, well, obviously, if we're talking about between 0 and 1, not limited to integers, which, when we were talking about counting numbers, those were presumably integer numbers we were using before.
Well, real numbers, by the way, aren't between 0 and 1. They're all over the place.
But in our example,
yeah,
all the numbers between 0 and 1 would be real numbers.
Right. Like if you want a continuum in there, there would be real numbers. So 1/π would be in there. Pi is a real number, but not a rational number. It's not a ratio. So, but pi is kind of nice for an irrational number because it's computable. Like, you know, it's actually very easy to compute pi. And actually anything that's useful is usually computable. But so you can't number the real number. You can't denumerate the real numbers, but you can denumerate all of the strings in the English language, A, B, C, and then once you do it, the strings of one length, A, A, B, A, C, add a space in there, and you can get, like, add all the punctuation you want, and you can denumerate all of the statements in the English language, even ones that are certainly very huge. So that's kind of proof that you could never get there. And there's lots of numbers we can't talk about. Now, any useful quantity that we can get is, well, first of all, any scientific quantity is fine because that's always going to be approximation anyway. And any number we talk about in mathematics, well, we've already talked about it. So it's not in that list. So that's sort of fine. But I do think there is a usefulness in having these unknowable numbers. And there's sort of levels of this argument. So there's also the computer science level of this argument where there's something called the busy beaver function. Have you ever heard of this?
Not in this context.
Okay. Well, it's really cool. So it's like, it's basically pick your favorite programming language. Let's say it's Python. Okay. And so you say and you limit yourself to programs that print, I don't know, strings of zeros. Okay. And then you also limit yourself to programs of a specific length. So let's say like, I want my code to be 50 characters long or something. And so the busy beaver function of 50 is going to be the function that the program, I don't want to explain all this stuff, that prints out the largest number of zeros in a row while still stopping. So
I think I have heard some variations on this before. Yeah.
Right. So that grows very, so you could say, okay, I'm going to do a for loop, you know, and it's going to go to 1,000 and I'll print zeros. Well, if I'm going to go to 1,000, I might as well go to 9999 because of the same number of characters. And maybe I could fit a for loop within a for loop, you know, all that stuff that you could sort of think of doing. Now, the thing, if you could guess, the thing with that is that's going to grow faster than anything that's computable because you're basing it off of what the code can do. So that function is not itself computable, proven not computable. But it still tells us something about how programming works. It gives us an upper bound to what is possible, what we can do in our constraints. And so even though it's something that's like outside the system that we can't possibly do in the system, it tells us something about the constraints of the system itself. And I think that these unknowable numbers have that same role in mathematics. But continuums do cause a lot of problems. There's something called the continuum hypothesis, which is not knowable. It's like, okay, so you have the counting numbers, you have the real numbers, there's something in between. We can't know. That's been proven. And the Banach-Tarski paradox, which is in measure theory, which is like, there's a construction where you take apart the points of a sphere, and then you kind of, you don't shrink or, but you kind of like, you rotate them apart, move them, and then you get a few of them and then rotate them back together. And then you have two spheres. And then it's like, well, that's kind of crazy, but that's sort of a fancy construction of the Hilbert Hotel, which is just like, hey, everyone move up a room. If you're in room two, you move up to room three. If you're in room three, you move up to room four. And then since there's an infinite amount, everyone has a room. And then, oh, look, there's an opening at zero. It's basically a very complicated ass version of that is what Banach-Tarski is without going into the details. But it requires the axiom of choice, which is, again, you know, we don't know. And then mathematicians have ways of getting around it, but it does cause some trippy things that don't conform with our physical intuitions. So that's sort of, I'm kind of fascinated by this because I feel like there are people who agree with this finitism stuff that I just don't buy. And I'm just wondering, just to put it out there, if there's anyone who wants to like discuss it on the show, because I'd be happy to talk about it and find out what you believe.
Well, the
or what I hate to put mathematics in terms of beliefs, but I think it's more of like how you think about things.
There's perhaps a compelling argument in there don't exist this many of anything in the universe, so why are we even concerned with numbers this big? But we're doing so many abstract things to begin with in mathematics already that maybe being able to tie it back to the physical world is not particularly relevant.
Right. And they could also argue that anything you do with a computer is not just finitist, but ultra finitist mathematics. And, you know, so that's why I'm kind of, that's why, like, you know, my conception of how things work might be very similar to theirs. But I also think, yes, but the symbols that I'm manipulating in the computer could also represent an infinite quantity. And they'll say like, yes, but you're doing a finite computation. I just feel like their way of thinking about it makes things overly complicated, actually. Surprisingly, not getting rid of infinity makes things overly complicated without too many benefits. That's my view of it, but yes.
So this raises the question, how does this tie into quantum computing, quantum anything?
That's...
And is this a case where the physics is forcing us to come up with new maths, or the math has explored this and now we're just trying to figure out how to tie it into the physical reality?
Well, I don't know if there's... I think there's, first of all, the question that's on my mind that I don't know how to answer is there an infinity in quantum mechanics? And I'm pretty sure the answer is yes, in terms of how physics thinks about it, but I'm not really sure how that fits in here. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm out of my depth already.
Oh
there.
Man!
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, it's if you can be shown that you're using some physical process that we think is infinite, then yeah, that could I don't know that there isn't an infinite set in the universe too. It seems like the universe that we inhabit is finite in a lot of ways, but we just don't know.
Well, it certainly seems like an appealing way to think about it. That
yeah.
If there are numbers that are unknowable, at least in our physical reality, that perhaps a quantum universe is where those, you know, uncountable numbers might reside. And I may be
the way I look at it
abstracting
is
abstracting in a
right
inaccurate manner there.
I look at numbers kind of abstract concepts, and I don't think that they are. I don't think they exist in a physical reality. Now there's a lot of philosophy of numbers, which is really interesting. I think they're just used as useful abstractions that could apply to physical realities like sets. But I feel like they are logical constructions that we can talk about, and they're very convenient to talk about. And sometimes mathematics can be used to make predictions into physical reality, but I don't necessarily think it has to. And sometimes you talk about mathematics that don't seem to conform to physical reality, but that's not... I think that mathematics could be something that is the study of things that can apply to any physical reality that is logically consistent. So,
well, I feel like there's been a history of math coming up with kind of weird conjectures and contexts that at first glance just make no sense. Why would you even do that? And then we come up with ways to use that in the physical world later on. I'm thinking maybe some stuff with like hyperbolic spaces and or hyperbolic geometry or things like that, that was developed long before we were doing some of the, you know, kind of stuff in outer space and that actually utilizes that geometry. But so maybe there's something similar going on there with things in the quantum realm. But again,
yeah,
so far outside of my area of expertise that I'm grasping at straws.
Right. Okay. So I said my piece on the philosophy of math stuff. Now comes the hard part. How do we tie this in? I feel like Meta has their infinity symbol.
Didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask, how do I use this idea of infinite sets in my daily life? But I don't know if there's an easy sell on that one.
Well, I do feel like there's something very interesting about the idea of just coming back to the natural numbers. I created this rule, and I'm going to think of all combinations that I can create with this rule. And I actually think that those systems are the most interesting in mathematics. How could you use that in your daily life? I don't know about daily life, but definitely in terms of just thinking about, I think it could be used to like I feel like I'm going to come up with something that's not going to be very good. It could be used as a way to like breaking down a problem. Like this problem applies to all things that are like this or can be constructed in this way. And in fact, the natural numbers are constructed. So that's good because if you're a constructivist, those are people who believe, I only believe in things that can be constructed. One really interesting, and I think I've talked about this before, and I don't want to get into too much now, is the ordinal numbers, and they're constructed. So the natural numbers, like I said, have two rules. The ordinal numbers have one rule. One single rule is that an ordinal number is the collection of all previously defined ordinal numbers. So, okay, I have no numbers that are previously defined, so I could start with zero. I get that. That's my zero, right? Okay. Then what's the collection of all the ones that are previously defined now? Well, it's zero, so the set of that is one. Okay, what's the set of all previously defined now? That's zero and once, that's two, and so on and so forth. But then you have the collection of all these numbers, which are natural numbers. You say that entire infinite collection is also an ordinal number. So you go one step up, and you keep moving up that chain, and that goes on not only infinitely, but it's so big that it actually doesn't even fit into set theory, which is crazy. But that's the problem with that is that you can't always construct it. So it's not that rule doesn't tell you how to construct it from previously defined things. It just tells you how to define it if you have some set of previously defined things. So very interesting. I'm not going to get into that so much unless you have specific questions.
Let's save that for another day.
Yeah. So what was I trying to do? I was trying to come up with a theme today.
I feel like
there's some tie back with the metaverse.
Well, because the metaverse is purely digital in nature.
Yes.
One would think there's nothing preventing it from being infinite in size.
Right.
But will it be? And is there a compelling reason to finitize it? Is that the right term?
Right, exactly. It could be, there's only a finite number of people. So there's only a finite number of locations that can be rendered. But would you consider the metaverse at least potentially infinite?
Yeah, well, and going back to the classic source material, I believe the original metaverse of Snow Crash had, you know, a fixed number of addresses to it, it was modeled as a sphere of a certain size, and so, you know, you had a certain number of locations across that.
Basically, I feel like
coordinate grid.
I feel like that one sounds like it's more like a blockchain where it starts off with a specific size and it can't be changed. That sounds interesting, but yes, I think a metaverse that works would be started by something else other than Facebook and Microsoft. I said that already. All right. Well,
that's certainly the infinite versus finite aspect of the metaverse will introduce some interesting dynamics because presumably people will be purchasing quote-unquote real estate in the metaverse, and the market in a finite versus infinite realm is going to be dramatically different.
Correct.
Not to conflate the finite and infinite nature of certain currencies in our reality,
right.
but there's some obvious potential parallels there.
Yeah, and I feel like just like we have NFTs now, the hype in a few years might be like real estate on the in the metaverse, sold by Facebook and controlled by Facebook. That would and also sorry, Meta.
Right.
This is going to take a while. All right. I think we're good today. We got about an hour, so that's satisfying. I think the people have gotten what they wanted. Any last thoughts? I think we're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely be coming back to some of these topics, but I think we've said what we've got for today.
All right, great. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support The Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.